Chapter 5. Before you can think out of the box, you have to start with a box. Everyone has his or her own organizational system. Mine is a box, the kind you can buy at Office Depot for transferring files. I start every dance with a box. I write the project name on the box, and as the piece progresses, I fill it up with every item that went into the making of the dance. This means notebooks, news clippings, CDs, videotapes of me working alone in my studio, videos of the dancers rehearsing, books and photographs, and pieces of art that may have inspired me. The box documents the active research on every project. For a Mari Sendak project, the box is filled with notes from Sendak, snippets of William Blake poetry, toys that talk back to you. I'm sure this is the sort of stuff that most people store on shelves or in files. I prefer a box. There are separate boxes for everything I've ever done. If you want a glimpse into how I think and work, you could do worse than to start with my boxes. The box makes me feel organized, that I have my act together even when I don't know where I'm going yet. It also represents a commitment. The simple act of writing a project name on the box means I've started work. The box makes me feel connected to a project. It is my soil. I feel this even when I've backburnered a project. I may have put the box away on a shelf, but I know it's there. The project name on the box in bold black lettering is a constant reminder that I had an idea once and may come back to it very soon. Most important, though, the box means I never have to worry about forgetting. One of the biggest fears for a creative person is that some brilliant idea will get lost because you didn't write it down and put it in a safe place. I don't worry about that, because I know where to find it. It's all in the box. I like cardboard file boxes for a bunch of reasons, all willfully idiosyncratic. The shelving in my work area at home, which holds my audio equipment, hundreds of music CDs, and piles of musical scores, is not mere heavy-gauge industrial shelving. It's scaffolding equipment, strong enough for painters to stand on when they're working on the exterior of a house. In other words, the shelves are built for hard work. That's a personal aesthetic choice. I want everything around me, from my dancers, to my dances, to my shelves, to be strong and built to last. The file boxes reflect the same practicality. They're easy to buy, and they're cheap. I don't need to spend $1,000 on an exquisite cherry cabinet that fills up in a week. They're 100% functional. They do exactly what I want them to do. Hold stuff. I can write on them to identify their contents. You wouldn't do that with a $1,000 cherry file cabinet. I can move them around, which is also hard to do with a heavy wood filing system. When one box fills up, I can easily unfold and construct another, and when I'm done with the box, I can ship it away, out of sight, out of mind, so I can move on to the next project, the next box. Easily acquired, inexpensive, perfectly functional, portable, identifiable, disposable, eternal enough. Those are my criteria for the perfect storage system. And I found the answer in a simple file box. It's not the only answer, of course. Mari Sendak has a room that's the equivalent of my boxes, a working studio that contains a huge unit with flat pull-out drawers in which he keeps sketches, reference materials, notes, articles. He works on several projects at a time, and he likes to keep the overlapping materials out of sight when he's tackling any one of them. Other people rely on carefully arranged index cards. The more technological among us put it all on a computer. There's no single correct system. Anything can work, so long as it lets you store and retrieve your ideas, and never lose them. It doesn't have to be complicated. I know one magazine editor who hoards newspaper and magazine clippings. A good chunk of his day is spent with scissors in hand, clipping stories, photographs, and illustrations. After he clips, he opens a file drawer and deposits the clippings on a pile of other clippings. Then he closes the drawer, letting them accumulate in the drawer's cool darkness. He doesn't think about them much, but he knows they are there if needed, which happens whenever a colleague wanders into his office desperate for a good idea. He'll open the drawer again, haul out its contents on his desk, and say, "Let's see what we've got here." Host and guest then leaf through the clippings together. Without fail, an intriguing headline or phrase or photo of someone will beget a thought that in turn suggests a story idea. And the guest will depart slightly less desperate and infinitely more inspired. The drawer, in effect, contains the editor's pre-ideas. Those intriguing little tickles at the corners of your brain that tell you when something is interesting to you without your quite knowing why. Bringing them out reminds him of what he was thinking when he put them there in the first place. I also like the simplicity of a box. There's a purpose here, and it has a lot to do with efficiency. A writer with a good storage and retrieval system can write faster. He isn't spending a lot of time looking things up, scouring his papers, and patrolling other rooms at home, wondering where he left that perfect quote. It's in the box. A perfect archive also gives you more material to call on, to use as a spark for invention. Beethoven, despite his unruly reputation and wild romantic image, was well organized. He saved everything in a series of notebooks that were organized according to the level of development of the idea. He had notebooks for rough ideas, notebooks for improvements on those ideas, and notebooks for finished ideas. Almost as if he was pre-aware of an idea's early, middle, and late stages. For anyone who reads music, the sketchbooks literally record the process of his invention. He would scribble his rough, unformed ideas in his pocket notebook and leave them there, unused, in a state of suspension, but at least captured with pencil on paper. A few months later, in a bigger, more permanent notebook, you can find him picking up that idea again. But he's not just copying the musical idea into another book. You can see him developing it, tormenting it, improving it in the new notebook. He might take an original three-note motif and push it to its next stage by dropping one of the notes a half tone and doubling it.